We'll hear from the appellant.
May it please the court, Kristen Kimmelman for Mr. Cruz. At trial, Mr. Cruz conceded that he was guilty of count three, which was sexual abuse of a minor. He contested the allegations of count two and one, which had to deal with whether or not those sexual acts were caused by force and threats. The only evidence of force and threats were DA's, the minor victim's, statements. And so the case rested on DA's credibility. And Cruz's defense theory throughout trial was very clear. He argued that DA had a motive to lie about the force and threats, and that motive arose in 2019, years after the incidents, because of a custody hearing involving their son. And DA was worried that she would lose custody of her son and that Cruz might have some rights over the son, and that's when these accusations arose. So throughout trial, from opening to closing, Cruz was attempting to attack not only her credibility, but specifically say that she had this motive to lie about the force and the threats. And so given this context, the evidentiary errors that happened throughout trial cumulatively make this an unfair trial for Mr. Cruz, because the errors tended to bolster DA, enhance her credibility with inadmissible statements, while at the same time cutting off the defense from cross-examination and admitting other evidence that was actually contemporaneous posts or images from the time of the alleged abuse, or at least before she made those accusations. In the brief, I raised three standalone issues and then also cumulative error. Today, I was going to talk about all of them in the context of cumulative error, beginning with the most egregious, which was the admission of DA's out-of-court statements, all of which happened after her motive to lie arose, so they were not admissible as prior consistent statements, as the government argued below and the court agreed below. And those came in through three witnesses, through the detective, who testified about what DA had told her, also through the forensic examiner, same, and then most egregiously through this half-hour audio interview of DA's statements to the case agent. That audio interview was recorded just days before the indictment came down in the case, and it was the last exhibit that the government introduced through its last witness on the second day of the trial, after it determined that it needed more evidence to enhance DA's credibility. And the government argues that Mr. Cruz waived this objection. Below, there is no evidence in the record of an intentional relinquishment or abandonment of a known right. No one was talking about this requirement that the statements have been made pre-motive. And so with that audio interview, not only were these multiple 30 minutes of DA's statements about what had happened that, of course, the government relied on in closing, talking about how often DA had to make her statements, how consistent they were, and, you know, obviously how awful it was that she had to make these statements multiple times. Those themes from the government's closing were also what the case agent was allowed to testify through the audio interview, because even though Cruz objected to the case agent's statements about how courageous and brave and consistent and believable DA was, those were statements he made in the audio recording, the court allowed those to come in. The government argues that
make sure on that point, the encouragement, getting the witness to continue. What was said about that as a cautionary matter to the jury?
There were no cautionary instructions about that. The agent had testified earlier, before Cruz's interrogations were played, that he does, especially with a suspect, try to make that suspect feel comfortable, you know, not being judged. And then after the audio was played of the DA's interview, the case agent said he uses a technique of leading by believing, and so he believes the witness. And then he added, and DA gave me nothing to not believe her about, no reason not to believe her. And that also the jury heard. So essentially, the agent was testifying about the believability of DA, and the audio interview began with him talking about how inconsistent and unbelievable Mr. Cruz's statements had been. And so the agent, through this audio, is playing a role of essentially an oath keeper, or telling the jury who to believe. And that is not something that's permissible under the rules. And it mirrored onto what the government's argument was at closing. Her consistency is her corroboration, the government said. Additional errors that tilted the scales toward DA were that the government was allowed to elicit from DA's grandmother evidence of the grandmother's prior sexual abuse and trauma. Cruz objected as irrelevant. The grandmother was allowed to continue opining that she was not surprised that DA made the accusation so late after the fact, because that's what the grandmother had done in her case. So it was not about her perceptions of DA, it was about the grandmother's own personal experience, and that is not a permissible opinion testimony and not helpful to the jury, because the jury is hearing the evidence and can make those calls itself. The last issue raised in terms of ruling in favor of the government, the evidence they wanted to offer, is the Killeen Police Department detective's outcry opinion testimony, where she is being asked and to testify essentially, and says that a lot of the time sexual abuse victims make the accusations much later after the fact. The defense did object to this as irrelevant. She was not qualified as an expert opinion. The government didn't assert below that she was an expert. The government said that her testimony about how accusations happen in other cases were relevant to her training. And then she was allowed to testify and essentially bolster DA's the pattern of how this came out with DA, that it was much later after the fact that she made the accusations. And so part of Cruz's defense strategy, of course, was to test the credibility of DA. And he attempted to do so by introducing Facebook posts that did span many years, but most of them were focused on the time of the alleged sexual acts, 2015 to 2016, up to that 2019 accusation that she made. And the defense tried to introduce those Facebook posts to tend to negate DA's account of essentially living in fear of near daily rapes by Cruz.
Mm-hmm. District Judge, you know what happened better than I do, but my understanding is the district judge looked at all that and said, I'll let you get one of these posts in that makes your point sufficiently. The awful lot of the rest of this is not just cumulative, but is on other matters altogether insofar as the impact it would have. Seems to me that's the kind of admission versus exclusion decision that the district judge has given a lot of discretion on. Why isn't it within the range of discretion, not error, to allow one that makes your point in and whatever else was said to the jury, and I don't know what that was about, there are a lot of other posts, a lot of other whatever you want to call these things, that make similar points?
I think because the case hung on DA's credibility, it was important for the jury to have the actual facts before it of what those posts were and when they were made, so that the jury could assess DA's credibility for the account of what she said happened back then in Big Bend against the impression that she's leaving on Facebook.
My understanding is the concept you wanted the jury to grab hold of is this. This girl had gone through her life doing when this alleged abuse was occurring without any indication in these communications with her friends that she was troubled or otherwise any references to it. Was the jury informed of that more generally, that that's what was in these posts?
So my recollection is that the jury was not informed more generally. DA did authenticate the Facebook posts, but the posts themselves were not admitted into evidence for the jury to examine by on their own. And there was no questioning in front of the jury about generally how many times did you make these posts. The court initially cut off any sort of questioning about posts, and after the defense attorneys repeated urging to let in this relevant information, the court allowed Cruz to ask about one post, and he did so. He tried to look for another one. The court said, no, that's all you're getting, no more. I think in the context, particularly of the entire trial, where DA testifies and then her inadmissible statements come in through other people, and then there's audio interview of her, there was a mountain of evidence, to quote the defense attorney, that the court let in, giving extensive leeway to the government, and only letting Cruz examine about one Facebook post. And by what I could tell from the exhibit, there were two, maybe three other ones that were from the contemporaneous time of Big Bend. I don't think it would have been overkill or overly cumulative to ask about those in the context of all the times the jury got to hear from DA and the importance of her credibility, and that this was some of the only evidence from DA's own words, if you call Facebook posts that, of what was going on at that time, because other than DA's testimony, you know, there is no witness testimony, there's no physical corroboration, and no other contemporaneous statements. But I understand the court's concern with that, but I think, you know, that can still go, is an error ultimately that can go to the cumulative prejudice that.
There's no pretrial addressing of that. There was no motion in limine, motion to otherwise limit.
There was not.
The judge was getting this issue as contemporaneous with it being introduced.
Correct. The Facebook posts were listed on the defense exhibit lists, in contrast to DA's audio interview, which was not listed on the government's witness list. But the government, to my recollection, did not do any motion in limine on that. And then the other somewhat similar issue is about the 30-second videos, I believe there were three of them, from an amusement park trip that DA took with Cruz in 2019. My apologies, I said 2018 in the brief, but after looking closer at the record, it does look like it was July 2019, about 2 months before DA made the accusations that the defense was trying to introduce these videos to show how they were interacting at the amusement park. DA did authenticate them. She said she remembered posting them, remembered the trip. And they were not allowed because DA said that those, you know, were the posts. I think maybe there was a misunderstanding of, I think it's Rule 613B, where you have to ask the witness about these prior inconsistent statements. But just because the witness says, yes, that was the statement I made, doesn't mean it isn't admissible. And here it was admissible to tend to negate her account of being in fear of Cruz. And so with the credibility being the crux of this case, those different rulings would have produced a very different trial where the government's theory in closing couldn't have been her corroboration is her consistency. They repeated that several times, relying on those inadmissible statements and Cruz tried his best to introduce that evidence negating credibility, and I think that's why this is a harm, because it was a close case on credibility, especially once you remove those statements. And so for those reasons, we would ask the court to reverse on counts 1 and 2. If there are no further questions now, I've reserved time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Richard Durbin for the United States. I would, Ms. Kimmelman has done a great job, she always does, but I would put into context, this was not simply a question of DA's credibility, but there was also a question there of Mr. Cruz's credibility, because two recordings of interviews with him were also played to the jury. And the context of this is, the counts that are in issue are counts one and two, which are sexual assault of a minor between July of 2015 and April of 2016. The significance of that time period is that's when they lived in Big Bend National Park, and that gave rise to jurisdiction for the offenses. She was 12 and 13 years old at the time. Her testimony was that she was groomed by him when they lived in Florida before they came. She was attacked by him and raped in Florida on their way to leave to Big Bend, and then she was raped multiple times while they lived in Big Bend. In April of 2016, they moved out of the Big Bend Park so that whatever relationship continued beyond that was not subject to federal jurisdiction, and he wasn't charged with that conduct. That puts into some context the relevance of the Facebook postings prior to that time period. This was something that he did over a lengthy period of time, and I would submit the district court was not unreasonable in finding that it was not particularly relevant what she was posting on Facebook in 2019 to what he was doing and how she was reacting to him in 2015 and 2016. But I'll get to
that. Was the testimony that Cruz, though, was still having, forcing himself on her during the time of these Facebook posts?
My recollection of the testimony or understanding of it is there was still sexual contact between them, but it was not described. It was she didn't go into her testimony didn't go into description of the nature of it, and so the significant descriptions were during that 2015-2016 time period, and the context I would say is basically the question was his statement to investigators was, I didn't start this, she did. This 12-year-old was the aggressor in this, is basically what his story was. And she said, basically, he groomed her, and then he attacked her on these occasions and told her, don't tell anybody. And he used actual physical violence while he was in Big Bend. At one occasion, swinging a machete into a breakfast nook. He also smashed up her things. He destroyed things in her room. And so he threatened her, and he actually demonstrated that he would use violence.
Of course, the able counsel that you identified on the other side, among the points is that it's only DA who's saying these things. And
well,
it's not corroborated, the machete incident. No one corroborated that, if I understand it.
Well,
to what extent is there any evidence that would raise this crime on count to guilt of counts one and two, other than from DA herself?
What he said and what's in his recorded interviews is he acknowledged that he was doing violent things. He didn't say he was doing violence to her when he was perpetrating sexual acts upon her, but he acknowledged that he smashed things. He threatened her with harming himself. He did harm himself at one point. He attempted suicide. He minimized, he tried to say it was for other reasons, but actually what he was describing was exactly what she described, and it was during more or less the time period that is alleged in those two counts of the indictment. So that was some corroboration, and the jury was able to evaluate the extent to which he was minimizing, because he started out, he didn't want to talk about it in his first interview, and then he said, well, I didn't start this, but he repeatedly, 16 times in that interview, he called himself a monster, and he said, I should go to prison, and in the second interview acknowledged that he was committing violent acts in her presence, and that they were clearly directed toward her and her siblings. He also made threats regarding doing similar conduct to her sister and And that was some corroboration. There was also additional corroboration in the form of the testimony of the grandmother. And the grandmother, she was not entirely consistent. She said several things, but she did say that she observed that DA had fear, and she also observed that she appeared to be upset. A friend, Tucker, testified not so much about what DA's conduct was, but about what Cruz's conduct was. And his conduct was very controlling, very possessive. He wanted to know where she was. And there was testimony that he wanted her to go with him. He wanted to pick her up at school, and she didn't want to go with him. And she didn't want him to pick her up at school. So there's corroboration of her testimony in the testimony of other witnesses, as well as in the statements of Cruz himself.
We need to understand how far this problem of testimony or statements being made after a motive for deception arising. What evidence or what testimony came from DA that is not affected by this problem that she had a motive to fabricate?
I'm not sure that I can tell the court that it's completely irrelevant to everything that happened after the charge dates. But when it comes to, for example, questions about the cross-examination by the use of the Facebook postings, if there was a motive to fabricate, it came up in 2019 or 2018 at the earliest, 2019, whenever the Child Protective Service.
What statements come from her that predate that?
I don't believe there are any, Your Honor. The statements were after that because that's what prompted the investigation. But as far as the contemporaneous Facebook postings were concerned, she didn't fabricate, there's no suggestion that she was fabricating things back in 2015, 2016. And her Facebook postings, frankly, the district court, as I read, the district court said, those aren't really very probative. I'll let you ask a question about it, but I'm not going to let you go into it. And interestingly, the one that he asked about was after they had left Big Bend. And I would submit, well, so what is she supposed to look like on Facebook if this guy has threatened her and used force against her in 2015 and 16, and she's doing posts in 2018 and 19? Is there some particular type of fear she's supposed to manifest? I'm not sure how you would even describe that. If you look at the posts, the posts actually I think they're heartbreaking. She's crying out for friends. She's crying out for affirmation. She's got a posting of a conversation between the devil and God about a child who is a sinner. I think the district court probably did them a favor not letting them go too far into it. But I don't think it was an abuse of discretion to say, I will let you ask about it. She admitted to the statements. She admitted to going to the amusement park in 2019, several years after the assault, and well after the assaults had ended. And she acknowledged that she wasn't thinking about him at the time that she was on that amusement park ride. And I'm not sure how that a child having fun at an amusement park is going to be somehow reflective of she's scared, she's frightened, or she's not frightened. I just don't think there's a logical connection between those things.
Mr. Durbin, is it clear from the testimony when the sexual relationship between DA and Cruz started? Quite apart from whether it was by force or whatever.
It is clear that it began when they were in Florida.
And how old was she at
she
that time?
It's not clear whether she was 11 or 12. Her birth date is in late November of 2002. The first sexual assault in Florida was on or about July 5th or July 7th of 2015, and she testified, well, before that he would have her, he put her his hands down her pants and basically did some grooming activities.
How old was she when the child was born?
I believe she was 14. The child was born in mid-November she was born in 2002, and the child was born in 2018, I think she was 14 or 15 at the time. The child was born. born.
Thank you.
And she said that the relationship ended when she was in the pregnancy, some months into the pregnancy, and that's when the relationship ended. With respect to the prior statements, I think I've summarized what the corroboration was. With respect to, I mean, the prior statements, they weren't admissible. The waiver argument is based largely on the district court read the rule, read 801D1B1, and asked, if I'm getting it wrong, please tell me. And the defense counsel moved on to another objection. There was some back and forth, but there was no explanation of why the court's ruling on that was wrong, and then moved into, well, it's not fair. You didn't let me ask these questions, and it's cumulative. I think that that's, the waiver's a close call, but I don't say that it's not beyond the realm of understanding that in the record. With respect to the closing argument, I find two references to her prior statements. At page 1022 of the record, the prosecutor said she provided numerous consistent statements, and then said, you're the judges of credibility, does she impress you as honest? And then two pages later at 1024, she says, the prosecutor says, her own consistency is corroboration. Those are the statements that I find. It didn't go beyond that, as far as I can tell, in terms of relying on it. Our argument has to be on the prior statements, that largely it was harmless. It did not affect his substantial rights. The statements were cumulative, and there was good corroboration of what she was saying about the time period when the sexual assaults occurred. With respect to the confrontation issue, as I say, I think the district court was reasonable in finding that there wasn't a whole lot of relevance to the Facebook posts and the questioning for the reasons that I've described. Very tenuous relevance, and the test really for harmlessness on the confrontation, and so I don't think there was error with respect to the confrontation, but if there was, I believe that it was a harmless error, because on this record, even if he had asked questions about some of the Facebook postings, the question is, would the jury have gotten a significantly different impression of the witness's credibility? I don't see that in Defense Exhibit 1. And I would also point the court to the extensive cross-examination that was done by Cruz's lawyer during DA's testimony. It went on at least 12 times. He asked her if she reported. He went over and over again, did you report, did you report, did you report, did you report? That was the thrust of it. There was also some testimony about she did not manifest fear in various forms. One was he did ask questions about the amusement park ride, and she gave an explanation, and the jury could evaluate that. She was asked about a posting that said in 2016, after they had left Big Bend, I love my life and all who are part of it. I'm never giving it up. I've got it all. And then there was testimony from her grandmother, Rosemary Ogo, who said at times DA did not appear upset. She was asked that question three times by Cruz's lawyer. She said that DA was not afraid to have friends visit. She didn't see anything indicating DA feared Cruz when she was visiting in Killeen later in the time period that's involved here. Did you observe DA feared Cruz? She said she was asked that. And so there was ample cross-examination. There was also evidence that he put on through relatives, Portillo and Katrina Benavente, who both also testified that when they saw DA, she did not appear to be fearful. She did not appear to be afraid of him. So there was testimony that was covered in the record. With respect to Investigator Oak's comments during the recorded interview, as far as those are concerned, I don't believe there was a hearsay error. He wasn't testifying for the truth of the matter. I think the district court accurately observed the jury gets what this is about. He's encouraging her. This is about trying to get information out of a witness. He's not attesting to it. He's not vouching for it. He's not trying to, he's trying to encourage her to feel comfortable and safe to talk to him. And he even explained on cross-examination after the recording that he uses the approach of have the witness believe that you believe their story. And it's a matter of a technique of interview. It was not vouching for, it was not in there for the purpose of vouching for her credibility. And finally, let me address these couple of other issues that counsel raised. I think we've covered the 30 seconds of the amusement park. I don't think it had very much relevance, the amusement park ride in 2019. The testimony by Ogo that she had also been a victim of abuse, that was very brief testimony. She sort of volunteered that as she went along. The question was, did it surprise you that DA kept a secret? She said, no, it happened to me. There was objection, but the court allowed her to go on. And she basically was explaining the basis for her observations of DA's behavior. But she wasn't testifying as an expert. With respect to the detective, Lawson, who testified that she had done a number of 400 or 500 investigations, Lawson said there is no pattern concerning disclosure, and a lot of times disclosure can occur years later. I don't think there's anything remarkable in that particular testimony. It was based on her own observations. The objection was not based on lack of notice or lack of qualification or lack of expertise. It was the speculation about other cases is not relevant. That's what the objection was at the trial court. It didn't call for speculation. It was testimony that was in passing that again gave explanation to the witness's testimony. Based on the circumstances, what I would leave with the court in my last couple of minutes is basically the question for the jury was, do you believe what DA said when she said that this man 10 years, 12 years older than her, sexually assaulted her using force and using threats, or do you believe his testimony that, no, she went through all these different manners of having intercourse with him as a 12-year-old, that she initiated it, he was not the predator. He called himself a monster. He said he should go to prison. He admitted that he did commit certain acts of violence. If you look at their two stories and leave it to the question to the jury of which one is more plausible, which one makes more sense, that she was somehow some vixen who was tempting him, or he was a predator. And he even acknowledged that he stayed away from other children because he wasn't confident that he could control himself. I think under those circumstances, the errors that have been pointed out, I don't think that they affected the jury's determination. That was the question before the jury. It was a fairly clear question. Notwithstanding the errors, that was a highly reasonable interpretation of what the conduct was between them.
All right, Mr. Durbin.
Thank you all.
So there certainly was sufficient evidence, and that was because of DA's testimony. But then there was the added out-of-court statements that were admitted to the jury and repeated. Counsel referenced testimony about being groomed. From what I could tell, that did not appear in her own testimony. That was solely from the audio recording. That was something the government added in after the fact. With regard to the Facebook exhibit, it was voluminous, so was DA's audio recording, that the court allowed the government to fast forward through inadmissible portions and play a portion of it. But that same courtesy was not extended to Cruz's counsel the previous day. And the Facebook posts themselves, certainly people have different opinions of how much to trust Facebook posts, but that's a question of weight for the jury to consider, not for admissibility. And yes, parts of Cruz's statements in the interrogation were damning, but he didn't admit to force and threats against at DA for those sexual acts. And those are things for the jury to consider in a properly administrated trial, which this was not because of the evidentiary errors. And there are other cases like Tome, the Supreme Court case establishing this premotive rule. When it was sent back to the Tenth Circuit, the court said vacate and remand. The trial needs to be redone because it was just too prejudicial. Hendricks is one of this court's cases that made the same ruling based on cumulative error. And I would submit that even if the court doesn't think the other evidentiary errors are errors, there were numerous evidentiary errors with regard to the prior consistent statements. So even though it is one category of rulings, it is multiple errors throughout the course of trial. And when the court read Rule 801D to Cruz, that was on the second day of trial after he had already objected to Detective Lawson's and the forensic interviewer's testimony the previous day. Government said no, prior consistent statement. And so then the second day, the court reads the rule and he says, well, that's what it says. Let me move on, because obviously the court was not going to rule in Cruz's favor, and unfortunately he didn't know about the pre-motive requirement. He lodged many objections against that audio recording. I have no doubt he would have lodged that if he had known about it. And just to complete what Mr. Durbin said about some things, in closing, there were just a couple more statements. Unfortunately, the little girl has had to tell her story far too many times, but it hasn't changed because the truth doesn't change. And her own consistency is her corroboration. This poor girl has had to tell different adults what happened to her, and yet she's done it, and it hasn't changed. Her consistency is corroboration. And so it's a repeated theme through the government closing. And also with the grandmother's testimony, it wasn't brief. There was the exchange about the irrelevancy of her past sexual trauma, and she was allowed to testify about how that formed her opinion of DA's late accusations. And later on, she's allowed to testify, the grandmother is, about how that sexual trauma caused her anxiety and trauma, and how DA, when she told the grandmother what happened, which didn't include force and threats allegations, the grandmother explained she did as best she could as a traumatized victim. I can empathize with that. I knew when asked why DA wouldn't have told her about the force and threats, the grandma responds, because of the fear that she would be blamed for the events, because that's the way I felt. But you know, just from my experience, grandma says. And so that initial evidentiary ruling allowed other testimony from grandma to come in that was inadmissible and prejudicial. And so with those evidentiary errors, we asked the court to remand the case for a new trial on counts 1 and 2 so that Mr. Cruz can have a fair trial and the jury can properly assess the credibility of DA and Mr. Cruz. Thank you.
All right, counsel. Thanks to both of you for bringing your thoughts on this case to us today. It's been most helpful. I'll call the